Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People Podcast. Today we have Phil Ireland, CEO and co-founder of Hone Carbon. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Can you give us a quick overview of who you are and a bit of the backstory of Hone Carbon?
Yep. So I run Hone Carbon, which is a Newcastle-based business. I've been here in this role for about 2 years, growing that company as a subsidiary as part of the broader Hone Group. Prior to that, my career has mostly been international advocacy and campaigning and policy.
Yeah, nice. It's a very interesting backstory and to get into that. And then Hone Group has just gone through quite a successful Series A round. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
Mate, we don't get too many startup stories that get to that Series A round in Newcastle. We're starting to get more of them. But can you give a bit of a backstory on the journey to date or the journey to Series A?
Yeah, so the Hone Group itself has actually gone through a number of names, but had three founders, all from Newcastle, Anthony, Will, and Jamie. And they've brought the company through the last 6 years through a number of seed rounds and early raise rounds, and have got our hardware and software suite to the maturity to a state that's good enough for a Series A. So we just completed a Series A with a GrainCorp taking a major stake in the company.
Nice. So if we backtrack, what does Hone Group do? What does Hone Carbon do?
Yeah, so the Hone Group tries to reduce the cost and complexity of measuring things, and we use spectroscopy to do that.
Yeah.
So across our products, we're using miniaturized spectroscopy and chips to measure different agricultural commodities in real time. So our flagship instrument, the Hone Lab Red, we use to measure grain, protein, and moisture, canola, wheat, and barley, hence GrainCorp's interest. In Hone Carbon, we measure soil organic carbon, which you need to measure to generate and account for carbon credits as part of carbon markets. And we also have another product called the Hone Lab Black, which uses a different type of spectroscopy to measure liquids. And it's currently being trialed in wineries around the country to reduce the cost of measuring all the different things they have to measure within the winemaking process.
Beautiful. I imagine there's many things that they're measuring together, right?
Absolutely. There are lots and lots of different applications of spectroscopy. It is a technology that's been around for 60, 70 years, but only in recent years has the technology really been miniaturized and being produced on a scale that allows it to be used in the field and at a point that's cost competitive for the general user.
Yeah, cool. Okay, one more thing. You mentioned the major investor for the Series A is a bigger company within the same industry. Is that right?
Similar industry. Well, GrainCorp is a commodity trader.
Yep.
They're not in the technology business that measures moisture and protein of grain, but they're in the same sector.
Yeah, nice. I feel like that's a pretty interesting story to just get that alignment there, and you see the bigger organizations in complementary fields.
Correct.
They're taking that thing, and I think that you hear a lot of success stories, in the startup world where that's the sort of avenue to go for your investment as opposed to the mums and dad dollars to get it, from the ground up to the first round.
And they're a customer and have been a long-term customer. And so they're familiar with our technology, our staff, and can have a reasonable amount of confidence in what we offer.
Yeah, beautiful. If we reverse it back, I think this is a really exciting story. You're seeing a Newcastle-based organization get to that Series A. That journey is no doubt quite an interesting one. Would have had your peaks and troughs along the way. There's a lot of people out there, especially our technology listeners, that look at startups and taking it from an idea or a product to where you've gone. How did Hone Carbon come about, and then the journey of Hone Carbon becoming part of Hone Group?
Yeah, so Hone Carbon came about around 2 years ago, and we've been in market really for 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
The company has for a long time looked at measuring soil analytes, and there have been previous iterations of our technology that's enabled that. I came on board to really spearhead and lead that effort. A lot of my background was in climate change advocacy and campaigning. So I recognized that there was a significant gap in how we measure and account for carbon credits. And one of the biggest barriers to the adoption of carbon farming in Australia is the cost and ease of measurement. So recognizing those challenges and seeing this local business, I made a pitch to come on board and run that. Yeah, essentially nice. With an impact focus to lower the cost and complexity of running a soil carbon project.
Yeah. So how did it come for you being non-technical to get the product to market, to work with, I guess, people that are, more technical minded in building the product, getting it to market? Because I think, again, that's another challenge a lot of startups face, where you've got a non-tech co-founder or a non-tech partner in the business trying to find their tech co-founder, trying to find people that can actually build what the market needs.
Yeah, it's a great question. So our business is filled with PhDs and technical people, and we've really got our bases covered there. What I've been able to do is work alongside them and engage my experience in stakeholder management, advocacy, people management, and also fundraising. So not-for-profit sector actually isn't that different to a startup in many ways. And I've been able to leverage my skills and networks in those areas and complement the technical background. I should say I do have a background in science, a science degree from Newcastle and a doctorate that looked at climate change adaptation. So I do have a framework to understand spectroscopy and what the technology is, but I certainly am not an expert in spectroscopy.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just really interesting because I feel like a lot of people, again, in the startup space have an idea or they come from a non-technical background, and then partnering with somebody that can actually bring something to life is a real challenge. And on the flip side of that, there's a lot of technical people out there who can build a product or products but don't have that industry knowledge or somebody that can understand what an industry is actually prepared to pay for. I feel like finding that mix is a very real challenge.
Yes, absolutely.
Very nice. So that's the Hone Carbon journey, and Hone Carbon makes up about a third of
roughly
the Hone Group, and Hone Group as a whole are now how big an organization now?
So we have around 20 staff.
Nice. Based here in Newcastle?
Based in Newcastle in Hunter Street.
Yeah, cool. Is there any reasoning behind, hey, just the founders grew up or work around Newcastle? Any reason for Newcastle in particular?
So the founders did all grow up in Newcastle. I also grew up but then moved away and came back. I think the long-term value of us being here comes to really like quite obvious qualities, and that's the quality of life in Newcastle is exceptional. The cost of living is less. And also just practically running a startup in a place like Newcastle is cheaper. Real estate's cheaper, staff, cost of living is less, so staff expect to be paid less, and all of those different things. It's just a much simpler environment to kick that off.
Yeah. Can you talk to, the local Newcastle tech scene or the startup scene? I think, you've spoken before to local companies and things like that. What's your experience been like from a startup perspective?
Yeah, it wasn't something I was particularly familiar with before the last couple of years, but I have been surprised by how many tech startups there are here and also how many tech skills. Previously in the not-for-profit sector, I was aware of a lot of tech staff that lived in Newcastle and worked remotely because this was a good place to live, but I wasn't so familiar with the number of small tech startups that are here and the excellent avenues for capital such as Newcastle or Hunter Angels for capital raising as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting story because I feel like 7+ years ago, students that came out of Newcastle University looking for a tech job probably had to go to Sydney if they were looking for an opportunity. There's a few jobs locally, but not a lot. And these days, it's the opposite. Like, we can't get enough technical talent coming out of university for the amount of jobs that are creating locally. And a lot of that has been local startup success stories, as well as corporates and enterprise investing in technology. But I feel like the breadth of roles available now for students is phenomenal.
Yeah, and with big companies and not-for-profits, and to be frank, the whole tech sector moving to remote working, that certainly puts Newcastle in better stead.
On the remote work part, how's that experience been over the last 2 years for your organisation?
Mixed. So we do essential assembly in and scientific work in our offices. So some staff have been able to be in our offices, and our offices are also quite large. So we've been able to meet the square meter requirement. For staff who've needed to work at home, that's been fine, really. We try to offer flexible working arrangements. So that was part of the culture already. So that hasn't really been challenging. What is challenging is recruiting in a market where all of the big tech companies are also now offering remote work to everyone. So it's kind of leveled the playing field across the whole tech recruitment market.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like the days of offering flexible work being a perk is now an absolute expectation from a candidate's perspective. And being able to offer, you know, fully remote work, you're now not competing with other local organizations. You're competing with Atlassian and Gamba and companies in the US. So it's just changed our market. But that's where coming to an organization like yours, the team's built in Newcastle. And if somebody wants to work with founders or wants to work with an organization where they can touch and feel the product on a weekly basis, work with the founders face to face, I feel like that then becomes a selling point for you guys as opposed to that fully remote work.
Yeah, absolutely. All our staff can interact with everyone, and you can be part of a business that's in the process of scaling up. And as wonderful as Atlassian and Canva are, they've kind of made it already. So you're slipping into existing roles and doing a set thing, which is appealing to some people, but we have a very different value proposition, and everyone that comes in is part of building our whole value proposition. And in terms of our values, we very much run first at people, then product, then profit. So people at the core of everything we do.
You mentioned before the team going from 20 to 40. What are the sort of roles? What's that team growth look like for a company like Hone?
We're certainly learning as we go, but there's a lot more customer-facing roles. So as we bring on customers, there's obviously an increased need to support them and walk them through their various projects. So a lot of customer-facing work. Obviously, the requirements in our technology for our uptime and everything else become more stringent. So making sure our tech team is really robust. They're the two key roles, I think. We also are, as we scale assembly, everything associated with production engineering as well needs to be scaled.
Where does the production take place at the moment?
In Newcastle.
Beautiful.
In Hunter Street. So we do assembly and a bit of manufacturing of components that come from a range of different places.
Beautiful. So not only the software being done here in Newcastle, but the actual assembly. That's beautiful. The full suite here in Newcastle.
Absolutely. I don't know of many other companies that do all of that, but all of our hardware goes through the Newcastle office.
Yeah, that's nice, and supporting obviously the economy locally and the community, the technology community locally as well. Mate, you mentioned just then that team growth, that product and the customer focus part. I feel like in technology, there's a technology and scale-ups in particular, there's a lot of focus on the technology. How I've built the best product there is. The code's really well written. It looks beautiful. But there's 1,000 apps in the App Store that are really well written and look beautiful but don't make a dollar. I feel like that focus on the customer is a big thing that's potentially overlooked in a lot of technology spaces. How closely does your team work with, you know, your end product or your end customers in driving your product roadmaps?
Very closely. So our technology is quite specified, and it's not cheap. So we work quite closely with all of our customers to make sure that our development pipelines are appropriate for their needs, but also we're getting feedback to continue iterating on what we're doing.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier today as well, a couple of the new products that might be coming down the line as well. Is that driven by clients tapping you on the shoulder, hey, I would be interested in XYZ?
To be honest, one of the long-term challenges of our startup, and I think a lot of startups, is the need to focus. And there's a lot of different applications and uses for our technology, but we have to be really strict about identifying what is the critical path to surviving and thriving over the next couple of years and how do we achieve that. So spectroscopy can be used to measure lots of different things, and we get approached all the time to go down different avenues. Some of those are appropriate, but most aren't the right focus for now, because we try to be fixated on delivering for the customers we already have and scaling out that market.
The ability to say no, that's very difficult, right?
Very difficult.
Yeah, and it's been the same. Hey, I've had personal experience there. We built a recruitment business based on Newcastle technology, saying Newcastle technology, so we'll walk away from, you know, an accountancy role or something like that that isn't our absolute bread and butter, or we'll work away from a role that's not based here. And that's been our focus. I feel like having a niche and doing that really well can be the differentiator. And once you've broken through that wall, as you guys do, and then you can add the different verticals, right?
Correct.
Hey, very interesting. It's good to see as well, because that's another challenge of startups or scale-ups, right, is, you know, diversifying too quickly and then not nailing your actual market.
Absolutely.
Yeah, nice. It's a success story, obviously, just going through a Series A round, but what's the biggest challenge been to date?
So within carbon, I think it is prioritization, actually. It's saying no to things and recognizing what do we do with our still relatively scarce resources and scarce time, and making sure that's focused on the long-term path to success. Yeah. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell. It's what do we focus on, and how do we make that a focus?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I'm sure no 2 days are the same, and there's different challenges pop up from time to time, but it's always interesting to hear, you know, whilst everything looks rosy from the outside, that what are those challenges going on the inside?
Yeah.
Mate, your personal journey, you mentioned you had quite a diverse background, and you did a bachelor's and a master's, is that right?
A
doctorate?
Yeah, I did a bachelor of science, bachelor of arts, honours, and then straight to PhD.
Technology space it's called education space, is changing.
Yeah.
Especially in technology spaces. There's short courses where people can go from high school, do a short course, and then get a software development role. There's also people that really swear by going and doing the degree. There's different varying benefits people see out of doing degrees. Really interesting to see or hear from you what your experience was like going through those degrees, and then what benefits that you think that you got from there.
Yeah, that's a huge question. I think there are lots of different pathways to lots of different roles, and not all require university, and maybe a decreasing number require university. I think my own journey, university was certainly critical in shaping who I am today and my interests and passions. Ironically, I really only started the PhD because I'd met my current partner and they'd offered me a scholarship, and it was just convenient at the time. But I think for me, it certainly gives you a grounding in rigor and process, and particularly dealing with a scientific company, understanding the scientific method and repeatability and reproducibility is very important. And any science degree is certainly a plus for people coming into our business, because you do understand those things. Yeah. And certainly in terms of a PhD, that's not a requirement for any of our roles. But I would say, whilst it being one of the harder things I've ever done, it does really grind you down to be very particular in how you speak and the claims you make and how you write. And I think it can be very useful in a startup and funding environment, because you have to be very truthful and specific and accurate in what you say and how you talk. And I think it gives that training, so to speak.
Yeah. So, hey, that's not the exact answer that other people have said, but there's a lot of similarities there with university being somewhere that teaches people how to learn, teaches people how to, you know, write, and write in particular ways. What you just mentioned there is a PhD and funding, or being the you know, a CEO. It's really, I guess, insightful, and quite common with a lot of the traits that other people find through there. What was the PhD in?
I looked at climate change, adaptation, policy, and practice.
So very relevant to what you're doing today. Highly likely you wouldn't be in the role you are right now without having done that, right?
Yeah, I don't think I would have gone into the different roles I went into. Previously, I should say, in the not-for-profit sector, I worked with digital campaigning organization. So there was a lot of tech staff very much involved in the tech space. But yeah, my doctorate did enable me to dig deep into climate policy, but also understand the fundamentals driving the carbon market, for example, which is what drives the need for soil carbon measurement.
Beautiful. But you're a CEO and co-founder of Home Carbon. That sounds like a big role. You're obviously growing and changing and the business is ever evolving. It sounds like there's a lot going on. There definitely would be in a role like that. How do you manage your day?
Poorly. No. I've got a couple of kids as well. So my day normally starts with them waking me up. I think we start each day with we've got a number of processes. I like to get to work a bit early to get on top of what's happening. But then we do a stand up to identify a big achievement for the previous day and the big achievement for the day.
Yeah.
I really am a firm believer in not insisting on everyone has comprehensive to-do lists because a lot of things come up, but rather being able to end each day with being able to say, I've achieved this one big thing.
Yeah.
So if you can walk away from every day having achieved something significant, that's good. Days do get away from you with meetings and customer inquiries that come up and issues you've got to troubleshoot. So I'd say about half of my time is proactive and half is reactive.
Yeah.
And I'd like that ratio to become less, but that's the reality of it now.
Oh, I think that's everyone's dream, right? Is to be proactive in everything. And email is the devil sometimes. You wake up, you've got other people's priority, which is email, seeing your inbox, and then your day gets down a avenue that you hadn't planned on.
Correct.
You mentioned two key stakeholders there, A, your customers, and B, your team, or A, your team, B, your customers. Either way, that is pretty much how your role is split as a CEO or of the company.
It's changing over time. I think a lot of the last 2 years has been about bringing in key investors and people interested in our value proposition and also bringing in our high-level customers. We are predominantly operating in a B2B space. So we have a few very large customers. So managing those relationships, bringing them on, and then passing them off to our product manager or customer success staff members after that. So I still engage in that high level stuff, but then also managing the team and working on governance.
Yeah, beautiful. That is that third case stakeholder, your investors. It's something the more co-founders or the founders that I speak to is go through that investment rounds. Some of them I've heard are, their jobs become full-time investing. You close one round and you start working on that next round. Is that part of your experience to date?
We have had a gap. There will be a gap, but it's fair to say that we are constantly thinking about our last round and our next round and when that is and how long our runway is and how fast do we scale and how many staff do we bring on and how does that match with our revenue and when do we need to do the next raise? So at this point in the business, it's always front of mind.
Yeah, nice. Back one step to your day. Do you use any tools with managing your day? Is it the G Suite? Is it a calendar?
It is G Suite, really. I operate in box zero, so then I do rigorous filtering because as much as people in my previous job, everyone debated when will the death of email occur. I can assure you it's not occurring anytime soon. This is the primary method of communication between me and all my stakeholders.
Yeah.
So it is the thing I absolutely have to stay on top of. And I function on the three D's when I go to an email. I focus, I have to do something about it, delete it or delegate it. I can't open it and close it. So my email list functions really as a to-do list. And then Google Calendar along with that. Of all the productivity management tools, and I've used a lot of them, as we all have over the years, actually using G Suite properly is sufficient for me most days.
Yeah, there's a lot of different thoughts in and around email, the introduction of Slack and things like that over the past few years as well. Like, will Slack take over email? Where does email sit in the whole suite of productivity tools? But I've tried Inbox Zero myself to varying degrees of success. I think each year I start back on zero, and as the year progresses, it gets progressively a bigger and bigger number on those little notifications.
Yeah, agreed. I think what Slack's done is we all initially loved it, and now it's like, oh God, Slack. But it's removed the need for internal emails, which I think has actually improved the utility of the inbox, because the inbox is primarily external communication. So it's actually like a mailbox.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I feel like, and it can improve those internal communications as well, you know, and especially if you set up Slack well within your organization. Correct. And it's not just a shit fight where everyone wants, you know, their respondents, you know, straight away, and there's certain channels and certain, you know, ways to operate within there. So I think, you know, getting those communication guidelines set up is pretty key, right?
Agreed.
Nice, mate. You mentioned like a daily stand up and then an end of day. One big thing that you've achieved the day before, any challenges, and then end of day, what have you achieved? Hoping to achieve one big thing. Is that across the organization, you guys use that as a bit of a tool?
We have slightly different practices within each team. It's fair to say we have a stand up within each team, but for some teams that's more a comprehensive list. For some teams it's more about triaging. For some teams it's about collaborating on a project.
Yeah.
So for the practices I mentioned are more for our team within the business.
Yeah, nice. But you've obviously, you know, well educated from a formal perspective. From an informal perspective, is there any courses you've done or any books that you'd highly recommend to people?
I mean, many. The best book I ever read, professionally speaking, is called How to Have a Good Day. The author, I think, is Carolyn. I want to say Carolyn Lucas, but I think that's the Greens leader in the UK. It's Carolyn someone.
We'll find it and link it up in the podcast.
It's an excellent book. And a lot of what has come out in professional development books after that has drawn on that. So I really do recommend that as the number one.
Yeah,
but there are lots of resources out there now.
Yeah. Outside of resources, there are, as you said, there's books and top books, there's audio books, there's podcasts now. Is there any other avenues you look to for continuing education?
Yeah, so podcasts. I listen. There's a good series called Diary of a CEO.
Yeah.
I listen to that fairly regularly, and it's good. But also, I mean, one of the challenges with books and podcasts is they're trying to essentialize or create a script for every startup experience. And the reality is it is also different. I could talk to you for weeks about the very unique journey Hone Carbon has taken and how that does and doesn't relate to other journey. So I think the key with any of these resources is to see them as an example, but recognize there aren't very specific templates for growing startups.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Oh, I think one of the most important things you mentioned today around that startup journey is like listening to your customers and the customers being the ones that are defining your product roadmap, and one of your biggest customers being the major investor in your latest round. So
yeah.
I feel like being customer focused and building a product around that has been the key.
Absolutely. And often in the tech space, we're dealing with new markets. The soil carbon market is a new market. Measurement for that is a new market. We're using hardware and software tools that are new. We run a mobile app to run our instrument. Mobiles have only been around for a decade or two. So a lot of these things are new, and we don't, as product owners, but as customers, we're not all clear on what we actually want. And we don't know what the next year or 10 years will look like. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty, but a lot of kind of creativity and playfulness that has to go along with that process of designing and delivering products that ultimately delight your customer.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, like, you're not actually dealing with new technology as a whole. Like, it's been around for more than 60 years, but what's new about it is, I guess, how quickly you can build it, the cost of the build, the size of the build, and putting something that used to be maybe only accessible to the very few into the hands of the many.
Yep.
And then being able to sort of, it's not a brand new technology, but it's just taking a technology that's changed or evolved with, you know, with the time, and being able to get it in the hands of more users, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So it doesn't need to be something that's brand newly created. Whilst it is new, there's new avenues for that technology, it's not creating something from absolute scratch, right?
Correct. And I think this technology has kind of progressed in this way because of the miniaturization of chips,
yeah,
which has happened for a whole range of other reasons, predominantly phones and smartwatches. But spectroscopy has been able to draw on advances in technology to create much smaller instruments that are portable and wireless.
Beautiful. No, that's nice. For those that, I guess, might be going through a similar journey themselves, they might want to reach out for some advice or to hear a little bit more about, you know, the journey going on. They think they might be able to contribute to your growth at some point. Man, what's the easiest way for people to get into contact with you?
So Hone has, I think we've got LinkedIn pages and also a form on the website that we're pretty responsive to. Obviously, I've got a personal LinkedIn. You can reach out to me there.
Yeah. And you're happy to help, you know, if somebody is going through their a bit of a journey.
Absolutely.
Happy to ask a question.
Yep. Just don't expect a response in a day, but I generally get to everything within a week. That's my response time.
I think that's a good response time. Imagine, you know, you've got busy enough days as well, but
yeah,
it's fantastic. Mate, thanks for coming on and sharing the journey. It's great to see another new customer success story. I wish you guys all the best in going to that next journey.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Listening to this episode of Nui Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.